Eddie and Rocky back together again.
Ooh. Yeah.
So, Rock, I hear there's an election coming up. I forget when it is. I think it's next week. I'm not sure.
Yes,
but polling. Now, I remember last time, Trump was dead in the water, according to polling.
Right.
A week, 10 days before the election. Here we are, a week, 10 days before the election, and Trump's dead in the water again. Now, I just saw the other day a guy, the fellow's name, Frank Luntz, I believe.
Yes.
He runs a polling
operation.
He's
always on Fox News, right.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And said, look, if the polls are wrong this time, my business is dead.
Yeah, there's only so much attention they're going to pay to you when you continue to be wrong on the biggest stage, right? So it'll be interesting. Now, compared to last time to this time, 538, a guy named Nate Silver does a poll. He gave, in 2016,
right, remember Nate Silver, sure.
He gave Hillary Clinton an 87% chance of winning. This year, he has given Joe Biden an 88% chance of winning. So both times, he's been all in on him, for instance, and that's a big one. And we'll see if it comes true. If it doesn't, who would pay attention to these things? There's no way.
Well, why would you?
Yeah.
And it's a trust issue that they're talking about with this thing. Sooner or later, people are going to go, well, why should I pay attention to that? Hell,
Yeah, I'll just draw straws or see what color kibble my cat eats to decide who's going to win.
Let's talk to an expert in the matter. Michelle Adams, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, Michelle, you heard us talking there. Is what Luntz said true? Do you think, or maybe their operation is wrong, or what are we talking about here?
You know, it really gets back to what we have learned for the past 20 or so years in brand marketing. That's the side that I sit on, working with brands and listening to what people say, and then looking at what they actually do. And that's, to me, what we're dealing with voting and polling. It's what somebody says they're going to do, because there's so many variables that go into your willingness first to pick up the phone and answer a pollster who has called, or to respond to them. There's so many subjective variables that will convince them to either tell the truth or not tell the truth to that person. And what we've learned is we have to go a little deeper and apply a lot of new tools that are out there. So in the marketing side, we've been applying tools like heart rate, looking at galvanic skin response. Are they telling the truth, not telling the truth? And then what we do in our neuro labs is actually 16-sensor EEG. And we started looking at sensitive issues this summer and really realizing that there are so many emotions that are not being measured. So there's what you're willing to say and what you're really feeling and how you're processing information. And this is deep-rooted emotion here.
Right. But by that rationale, I mean, you can't track emotion over the telephone, you know, and these polls are done via landline. And if they're not, and to your point, taking into account all these other things, maybe, you know, conservatives, by and large, I've heard a stat that only 1 in 5 conservatives will ever answer or take a poll. So there's a lot of factors that are not going into this old method of doing it, right?
Exactly. And it's the same thing, you know, we used to do, again, back in brand marketing. Would you buy this product? They all said they did, and lo and behold, they don't. So it really gets to how do we peel the onion back further, and how are we going to look at all of the measures that and conflict? And there's so much conflict right now on which side, what's acceptable and not acceptable. So it's not acceptable to put certain things on your Facebook page anymore and social media. So a lot of silence. And those silent voters are going to the polls and they are voting. And so I think we are not going to get it right anytime soon. What we do hear very clearly are the very gregarious, outgoing, have an opinion and stating it everywhere. And they do pick up their phone.
Michelle Adams is the founder and president of Marketing Brainology. And Michelle, what do you people who do what you do. What are you making of the fact that I believe I saw today 60 million people have already voted? Mm-hmm. And so by, shoot, we might see 80, 90, 100 million people by this weekend have already voted.
I mean, that's exciting.
It's amazing to me, but good Lord, that's crazy. I think people got really scared about all the post offices dead and yada, 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 and people jumped all over it.
Yeah, I definitely think people want to be heard, and this is their one time every 4 years. Hopefully they're voting in the smaller elections too, but this is their time for their voice to be heard. And what we did this summer is we brought in households of voters to vote, and how much conflict resides between, say, a parent and their college-age students, and what they're willing to even say in an interview in a safe environment. When you start hearing people starting to say, I don't want to say anything, is this on camera? That's when you should worry that there is a voice out there that feels like they cannot say anything right now in today's environment, whether that's a conversation with their own kids or somebody in their household, let alone on social media. So the one thing they can do is they can go to have the secret ballot still live.
Yeah, and well, and to your point, Michelle, it's cancel culture that has destroyed, you know, polling and a lot of things, because a lot of folks don't want to answer a poll because they're like, God, what if my, I don't know who's calling me. You hear all the, right. Eddie and I talk about it all the time with the, you know, the phishing and things that they do online or on the phone to get your credit card information or that sort of thing. So people are weary about, and rightfully so, about answering questions online, because you go, God, what if my boss gets the answers to this, and he's a Democrat and I'm a Republican, and I, all of a sudden I get, you know, the negative.
I guarantee
that.
I get 4 or 5 easy dead calls a day that I know I don't know that number, so screw it, I'm not picking it up.
Pick it up, The polling, Michelle, the polling, they got to find a different way of doing it. The way of doing it for the last 50 years is not working for all the ways you've described. People don't are reluctant to answer the phone. A lot of people don't have landlines anymore, and if they do, they're not answering them. They're certainly not answering questions about their politics, so they got to come up with a new way of accurately getting what the people are feeling.
I completely agree, and it's challenging. So they are moving to, I am aware of other companies out there also trying to measure heart rate. That's how much stake do you have in your candidate? You know, how vested are you? And these flip a coin kind of voters, they don't have a lot of emotion. So they're not on one or the other. So they could flip on election day when they go in there, or if they've pre-voted, but the majority of people have a lot of emotion. And that was a surprise to me. When we were doing the study over the summer, we were showing Biden ads and we were showing Trump ads that were released as of then. How much emotion is there? So the typical behavioral response and brain responses, they either shut down because they're done. I can only imagine how done people are with this whole thing. Or they get very, very upset. And so when they start talking, their response is very different than the calm response that they have is very different than what their brain did when we watch their brain watching it real time.
So what are people generally, from what your research showed, what are they thinking right now? Which way are they leaning? I mean, did you get a feel for it?
I don't. What exists is this conflict within households. I think there's generational divides. I think that you know, we're based in Dallas, Texas, so in the South, I think that you are seeing the anti-vote right now. So it's not that they love one candidate over the other, but they dislike one so strongly that maybe they're going to make a flip. I think it definitely comes down to fundamental political beliefs, your economic beliefs, and so the candidate is still a little less important than your party and your fundamental core values and what you believe in.
Michelle, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll talk again. Michelle Adams. She is, marketing brainology.
Yeah. And look, obviously it's especially unique because of the Trump factor, right? There's a lot of people, as saw in the last election, who are supporters of him but won't publicly admit it. I know probably 3 men who are going to vote Trump. Their wives hate Trump, so they will not utter that in their house, or else I guess they fear their wives won't have sex with them. I mean, seriously. I mean, this is what it comes down to.
You're cut off
because
of Donald Trump.
And they damn sure are not going to answer, sit there in the living room on the phone and answer a poll about it by, oh, my God, what's she hearing? What's he hearing? That sort of thing. So now the one poll I guess there was two polls that were right last time. It was the Rasmussen and the Trafalgar poll. And the Trafalgar poll has once again predicted Trump will win. What's interesting about the Trafalgar poll, and I talked about this last week, was instead of asking you your beliefs or who you're going to vote for, it asks you who you think your neighbor is going to vote for. And the methodology is a lot of people know their neighbors, and they're much more likely to answer honestly about their neighbors than kind of try to
themselves.
Than themselves. Right. Exactly. So that's now look, well, that could be a total, they got lucky and total crapshoot.
Right, exactly.
But we'll see.
Speaking of crapshoots, let's check the traffic.
He's back. He's quick like that.
What do you got, big boy?
Hey, I got stuck in the Trump parade on 275.
The Rolling Thunder. Yes.
Oh God, how was that?
It was crazy.
Yeah.
There was an accident involved with had about three fire trucks and four police cars and looked like a group of motorcycles. So I don't know if it was a road rage incident or whatever, but it was on 275 there near Winton Road, and it was there was a lot of traffic.
Yeah,
sounds like a mess waiting.
From
to happen.
The UC Health Traffic Center, UC Health proudly serving as Cincinnati's leading adult organ transplant program for more than 50 years.
Eddie and Rocky back together again. Coming up at after the bottom of the hour news, we're going to be talking to ABC about. Big announcement about the moon. How about that, huh?
Maybe found a little H2O.
A little water up there.
Game changer. That's what we need. We need something to redeem 2020, right?
Exactly.
Something that's been a total you-know-what show. And if we can find some water on the moon, maybe a little couple microbes or something, that would be poof. Be good.
It's going to be like The Martian with Matt Damon. You ever watch that movie?
I did. I know the premise, though, because so many people
It's a really good movie.
I've heard it is, yes.
He grows potatoes with water in his own poop, basically.
Correct, yeah.
But if we can, sustain colonies on the moon, wouldn't it be cool?
Yeah.
I mean, I in my lifetime, I'll never end up going up there. I'd love to. I've always wanted to go into outer space. But, I have that problem with vertigo. So I'm sure as soon as it got 0G, I'd be like, okay, puke.
Problem with heights and vertigo and all that. And it's probably going to cost a little bit of money. But besides all that,
if somebody invites me, my buddy Bill Gates calls me and goes, hey, Ed.
I got an extra seat.
Let's go to the moon. I'll be all in, man. So, Rock, you're a high roller.
Oh, yeah.
You're an influencer. You're all over the social media and that. Mm-hmm. Did you see this? And this just kills me on Instagram. And mostly, I would just say that all these pictures they're showing are mostly good-looking women.
Yes.
Okay?
That's a cornerstone of Instagram.
Right. The Instagram, the influencers. But what they're doing... All these pictures are them on private jets. Mm-hmm. Well, the private jet industry has, I think this is a brilliant idea. Because, these days, not a lot of people are flying, especially business trips
certainly
and whatnot.
Less.
People who would use these things. Rock stars who go and tour and all that.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is renting out a jet for $64 an hour. And you can get on there and have your picture taken like you're taking a private jet flight.
Oh, so you don't actually, I thought you were going to say you could rent one for 64 bucks.
Oh, no, hell no. It's just
like better than like a party bus you could get.
Right. It's just like sitting on a tarmac. You go in there and a lot of these girls are in like lingerie and bikinis and stuff acting like they're living big.
It's just another.
See, I think that's a great idea.
It's a great idea, but it's a fantastic idea because it plays on how phony people are. Anymore.
Oh, for sure.
Completely phony.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, now, you really are trying to dress to impress if you're renting up a jet for 64 bucks an hour which seems reasonable to me.
I was going to say, I'm going to pay that just to go check it out.
Right, I'm going to just sit there and have a couple of beers.
Yeah, you want your picture taken now, Mr. Boyman? No.
I get a couple of buddies together. We'll buy it for 2 hours. Just go there and sit there and eat pizza and drink some beers.
Right. Now, seriously, let's think about this. I mean, if they got a TV on there, go watch a game, a couple buddies, get
right
some
on.
Pizzas delivered. You know, yeah. A couple $100. It would cost you less than actually going to the game.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have to clean up or anything.
Yeah,
just sit
not.
There and act a fool, drink champagne. You know, it would be way cheaper than going to a football game. Sad but true.
It is. I've seen those pictures where they out some of the influencers where it's like they got the influencer have this tight shot of them like overlooking like a waterfall somewhere, but it's actually they're looking at some little stream in the Mill Creek or something that they've doctored and edited to make it look like it's something amazing. They're not in Thailand like they say they are. It's people are so phony on social media.
Yeah, come on up here. We're going to go to Lincoln Airport. We're going to rent us one of these private jets. We're going to sit there with our wives and act like
Whoa. You had me until that part. We're going to
we can leave the wives at home.
Okay,
I don't care.
All right.
Well, get us some hookers or something. I don't care. But we just go there and sit there on the tarmac and watch some football and drink wine and just carry on. Make fools out of ourselves.
Yeah, this is starting to be a good idea.
God, that's a good $200. We're getting it for 3 hours. So for, $200 between the two of us. You know, we got a hundo.
Yeah.
We go there and just have some fun, man.
Hang out. Not bad.
Yeah, I hope our wives aren't listening because we'd be dead. We got ABC coming up after our news. News Radio 700 WLW. So, Rock, this is a big announcement, really. As far as space travel goes.
Yeah, so I guess they're finding water on the moon, and that would make it easier for colonization and all
Absolutely.
That sort of thing. Yeah.
Let's talk to ABC News about it. Mark Remillard, what do we know?
Yeah, so this is a discovery. While it has been known that the Earth or the moon contains some water, that we've found evidence of ice on the moon in the past, recently, within the last couple decades. But what they discovered here, and what NASA is announcing, is that they discovered water on the sunnier parts of the moon. So ice crystals and things like that usually are found in darker areas and shady parts of craters, things like that. But this was actually discovered within the soil on a crater on the southern hemisphere of the moon, well within the sunlight. And so, as you mentioned, it's not clear exactly how critical this might be in terms of, obviously, there's plans to return to the moon by 2024 and actually create a permanent settlement on the moon. So it's not clear if this could be used as a resource, but it really raises a host of questions about this, though, in terms of, well, how'd the water get there, first off? But then second of all, how does the water stay there? Because what they assume is without an atmosphere to protect the surface of the moon, the water would be lost to space, essentially. So how is this water maintained and being held in the surface in spite of all of that and on this dry, arid surface of the moon?
So I assume that the big question would be, where's it coming from? Is it just something that's kind of residual from space, or is there like a... Boy, wouldn't it be great if there's like a spring
right
underneath there? Just it's flowing out, man.
The core of the moon is all water.
Yeah, it's not cheese; it's water, right?
Yes. Right.
But so they have a couple ideas. They think that some of them are very complex. I think probably beyond even my understanding, obviously. But in terms of, they talked about how there's possible that hydrogen particles from solar winds, essentially, landing on the moon, mixing with oxygen in the soil, and then radiation from meteorites mixing with that to create H2O. I mean, some of this is very complex in some of the theories that they have. But frankly, you know, they really don't know how this got there or where it came from. They think it's possible, too, that perhaps meteorites that have ice crystals and some concentrations of water themselves, as they crashed into the moon, then deposited that, essentially. But again, I think that that's one, again, one part of this. The other question is, how does it stay there? Because, you know, without an atmosphere, that water would be exposed to high temperatures on the surface of the moon every day, right, from the sun and things like that. So how is that water being stored? And, you know, now granted, small concentrations of water to the point where they're saying it's possible that maybe these are little droplets of water that are in between grains of soil on the moon, because they're saying that the concentrations of water that they've found so far, the Sahara Desert has 100 times more water than what they've discovered on the surface of the moon. So,
because I was going to ask you how, in essence, for lack of a better way to put it, mine the water, would they go about that?
Right, that's a great question. So that's why I think it's not really clear yet. A, is there more abundant sources of water on the moon? I don't know how far we've dug down in the moon, for example, during our lunar missions in the 1960s and 70s. I'm sure we dug somewhat into the soil, but when astronauts left in the 1960s, you know, they left thinking there wasn't water at all on the moon. And as I said, you know, within the past couple of decades, they've discovered ice at least, but finding water itself in these sunny areas is significant. But how much of a resource that could be as we've returned to the moon in the next couple of years and over the next decade we look to make a permanent settlement there, essentially, that remains unclear.
Mark, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Remillard, ABC News.
So I believe the next time we're scheduled to send a man and actually the first woman onto the moon is 2024.
It is 24 because I hadn't heard it. I knew they were talking about it. I just hadn't heard when.
So my people are telling me.
Now, is it going to be NASA or is it going to be one of the like SpaceX? Or...
I got to tell you, that was one of the most exciting. That was this year, right?
Which?
I think it was the SpaceX launch that went into space and it landed back down on the
aircraft. Oh, on that platform?
Carrier. Yeah,
yeah.
That was one of the coolest things that happened for me this entire year to see private company fund and develop and research and throw a rocket up into space. Those two guys went up there and then came back down and landed on the.
Those are the guys that went to the space station, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
That was exciting.
Now, again, going to, and I'm not going to, and it's really irritating me because I've always wanted to be around for when we're going to Mars and the other planets and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, not like Star Trek or something. Mm-hmm. I know I would never live that long, but I thought I really wanted to live long enough to see somebody land on the moon or on Mars.
Taking a long time.
I'm not sure I'm going to make it.
No,
I was a kid, we were going to the moon all the time. So I just remember thinking that, well, hell, we're going to be going to Mars before you know it. Well, that was 50 years ago.
right, yeah. And that was, what year was the moon landing?
First year was 69.
69.
And I think the last one was 73. Somebody can correct me, but more or less.
Right. So you think, okay, there's decades in there where surely we'll conquer Mars by then.
Right. Because it looked so easy to go to the moon.
Yeah.
After
the moon's there. And the,
right.
Hell, Mars is just right there.
I just
there.
Remember thinking, well, that was easy. Just shoot over there to Mars.
What are we waiting on? We got enough gas in the tank. We can make it.
Right. I don't know, but we'll see. Hopefully, we will all get to see that before we perish. So, Rock, here's something you can strive to achieve. I know you're kind of a manly man. Oh, you're a man's man. Yeah. You're a, you know. You can break this record. I know you can. A Chinese daredevil achieved a Guinness World Record when his body was covered in more than 140 pounds of living bees.
Golly.
I won't even try to say the fellow's name. Had multiple buckets filled with bees dumped over his head in Shanghai province to get the insects to settle on his body. The complement of bees weighed 140 pounds, 6.95 ounces. The congregation of insects was enough to earn him the world record for heaviest mantle of bees.
That's the thing. They just make up records.
I know.
They'll be like the fastest to run a mile while juggling backwards with their eyes closed in October. You know, it's like, come on. There's some things aren't meant to be records. This is one of them.
Are there bees, do you think they're doped? You know, do they? Because my grandpa used to keep bees, and you spray them with smoke.
Smoke on them, yeah.
And that would calm them down.
Kind of douse them down.
So, I don't know. You got to figure at least one or two of them gets a little bit
squirrely, running into each other, bang, yeah. Well, it's the weight of them, too, 140 pounds.
140 pounds of bees on you. Yeah. Rob, you know, one of these days, I'm going to have one too many beers, and I'm going to say... Somebody dump 141 pounds of beers on of bees on me
right now.
Come on, just go get them. Yeah, bring them over here.
What about murder hornets? You in the mood for those?
Now, see, those things seem to be a little ornery.
They're back in the news too. Yeah,
I saw that.
They're like big.
Yeah, they vacuumed a ton of them out of a tree in Washington State.
Yeah, and they were like the size of a. They were big, a couple inches long, right?
Oh, they're mean little bastards. I'll get you.
The new Hoover murder hornet vacuum.
Right. I want to know who came up with it, who invented that. You know, no, I see an opening here. I'm going to go with a murder hornet vacuum cleaner.
It makes sense, though, when you think about it. The guy looked like he was wearing a spacesuit, so he was pretty protected. And you get that vacuum going, boy, and you just whoosh, suck them all up.
There you go.
From the UC Health Traffic Center.
Coming up after the 4 o'clock news, going to be talking to a financial person about, hey, is there a stock market crash coming for a multitude of reasons? You mean, you know, name your poison.
Exactly, exactly.
But apparently a lot of people are afraid of it. We'll talk to this guy about it, see what he thinks.
So... Do you play the lottery? Do you ever?
Occasionally, yeah.
Occasionally. So how do you pick your numbers? How do you go about it?
No, I just go with the robot.
Okay. All right, just randomly.
I figure, you know.
And I was just thinking about this. So one of my earliest memories, I remember my grandma and grandpa, Boyan, lived on Deal Road over there. How they would play the lottery, and how they would choose their numbers is they got a bunch of gumballs, okay? And you know, little tiny ones, the size of a marble or whatever, you know?
Okay.
And got a piece of tape and wrote numbers on each one of them. And then would kind of shake them up. And then that would be how they would pick
them. They
would
do their own lottery pick.
Yeah. And when I found out, because I ate one of the gumballs one day and they, you know, kind of flipped out on me. I'm like, what are you doing? It's gum. Playing the lotto. What are you talking about? Anyway, so everybody has their own way of, you know, picking the numbers. Well, a guy named Samir Mazahem in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, he goes about it by, he uses the numbers of his family's birthdays, right?
Gotcha. I know plenty of people do that.
And now in the, you know, new tech era we live in, you can do the lotto online, right? So what he did was he goes into his app to save the numbers, the birthday numbers, and to, like, you know, make them live. But something happened and he didn't know he did it. So he went back in and set them up as favorites so he could play them again in the future. Anyway, long story short. He wound up buying two tickets to the lotto. He only wanted to buy one.
Right.
Except for the fact that he wound up picking the winning numbers.
Wow.
And now he has two tickets for him. Each ticket worth $1 million.
Nice.
So he won $2 million. So he's all upset that he bought an extra $2 lottery ticket.
Right.
That netted him, well, grossed him another $1 million.
See, I know some people who are dumb enough to have returned the other ticket. Like, I didn't want that. No.
$2 right
give
here.
Give me the $2. Give me the million, and I'm out.
Now, apparently the same sort of thing has happened before. A guy in Canada, Alberta, Canada, named Andrew Burke did the same thing. He accidentally bought two identical lottery tickets for the same lotto and ended up splitting $3.8 million with himself.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, do you ever play?
I don't.
Every once in a while, I'll, you know, if it gets to... You know, I'm like everybody else.
Yeah, I guess so. Like $400 million.
I'll wait, I'm going to turn down $50 million, but because I'll wait until it gets to be like $400 million, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm
in. Play.
But I play when they first started the Ohio Lottery, and I think the biggest prize then was $1 million or something. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee it was like the second time I played it, and I got 4 out of 6 numbers, and I won like. $70-$80, I think. I forget what it was. But I'm thinking, well, hell, that was easy.
Yeah.
So I basically took the money, and I'm like, I'm just a stupid kid. I was in my early 20s probably. And I'm thinking, well, it was that easy. I'm going to take this and invest it back in lottery tickets.
How'd that work for you?
I don't think I got like, I don't even know if I got two matching numbers any ticket I bought.
It's a weird thing. There's something about the first time you try something in gambling. It's got to be the devil that makes this true. You always win. Everybody I know, including myself, the first time you play blackjack, you win. Or the first time you play, you know, Texas Hold'em at a casino or something, you'll win. Or whatever, roulette. But then that's the thing that always keeps bringing you back, and you wind up, of course, losing much, much more money over time.
The first time I went to New York City, and again, I was a kid, and I'm walking down the sidewalk there, and you've seen these guys a million times, and and I'm walking through whatever Times Square or some such, and the guy's doing the three card Monty thing, and they got a person who will stand there and pretend they're playing.
Of course.
And they're winning their butts off. So I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, well, I can do that.
You see where it is? It's in the third cup.
It's that card right there. Yeah. But luckily for me, I was smart enough to, like, there has to be some kind of scam. I'm in New York City in Times Square. The money ain't free.
No, it's happening, and luckily you weren't a part of it. Yeah.
Well, I was this close to going, well, I got $20.
My one buddy we went to New Orleans with in college, to Mardi Gras, he wound up losing. We lost, and he wound up losing like all of his money in one of those things, just time after time after time.
Just kept doing it,
of course. He's bombed, of course, so he didn't know what was going on, which is exactly why they chose him to play.
Bingo!
Sir, over there, you look like you're the winner. Come on up.
You've had enough to drink to win. We've got the news now. News Radio 700 WLW. Is the election going to cost you your 401k, Rock? Of course, this time it's a crazy time every 4 years, around about this time where if this person wins, we're screwed. If that person wins, we're screwed. The stock market's going to crash. We're all going to die.
Right. Or is it just the natural ebbs and flows of the market? I mean, how long can the market continue to, you know, churn the way it's been, even through COVID, for God's sake?
Right.
So, but it's interesting. Obviously, a lot of people are going to vote dependent on this very thing, whether it matters or not.
Well, let's get an expert in the matter. Ryan Morfin, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ryan, are people getting all worked up over nothing, or do we have every right to be afraid right now?
No, look, I think there is some real caution that needs to be had in the stock market today. We're seeing a little bit of volatility even today.
Like I was going to say, it's down, 600, something like that?
Yeah, and you know, Q3 GDP is going to be coming out today, and you know, that print's going to be very important to watch. But on a broader standpoint, if you look at kind of the earnings of the companies today in the stock market, the valuations for a lot of these companies are insanely high. You're looking at, you know, the forward earnings multiple from a stock price like a company like Zoom, that's over 550 times earnings. And so people are starting to wonder, is the market overbought? And a lot of the people that have been driving up the stock market performance have been the retail investors, because nobody's doing anything, right? They're all stuck at home, so they're day trading. You're seeing retail investor trade volumes go through the roof. And institutions are starting to pull back a little bit and take some profits. And we're getting into Q4. People are starting to take what they call tax alpha, harvesting tax losses. So I think we're going to see some downward pressure as we have uncertainty in the election outcome. I do not believe we're going to have a clear winner on election night. I hope we do, but I don't think we will, for a whole bunch of reasons. And I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of volatility as we go through a recount process, not with just Florida, but maybe four or five different states at the same time.
What are the experts telling you? What are you seeing in terms of market volatility depending on who wins? If Trump wins, you predict this. If Biden wins, you predict that. What is it?
Yeah, no, it's a tale of two cities, no doubt. I think what you're going to see in the short term, in the very short term, is we're telling advisors to start getting into cash. prior to the election. And you look at 2000, Florida, it took 5 weeks to get to an outcome, settled at the Supreme Court. We lost 10% on the S&P in those 5 weeks. So if you've got multiple states going to battle for lawfare, you know, recounting ballots, looking at signatures, we're going to see a similar type of volatility, I think, as we don't have a clear outcome. And markets like clear outcomes, and we won't have that. So as it relates to who wins, you know, over the next 5 to 10 weeks of ballot counting, what we think is going to happen is, you know, the markets will be aggressively supportive of a Trump victory, mainly because that's one of the barometers the president uses for his success is the stock market. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, a lot of people are saying that there will be a return to normalization of trade ties with China if Biden wins. If Biden wins, we'll also have a much bigger stimulus. And that is something that the market was hoping for in Q3. It never came to fruition. And now there's some pent-up demand for that to play itself out. And for sure, there's parts of the economy that desperately need some stimulus. And so in a Democratic-controlled Congress and the presidency, they're going to get the checkbook out and they'll be spending. So I think no matter who wins, there's still some silver linings. It's just the path that we take to get to an outcome post the election is going to be choppy waters. If Trump wins, it's going to be more surgical stimulus. If the Democrats win, it's going to be more broad base and more Main Street.
Ryan Morfin is our guest. He's a CEO of Wentworth, a wealth management company. So, Ryan, are we looking at something potentially catastrophic here? I mean, you just said something, you know, the S&P going down maybe 10%. I mean, that's in the correction territory. But, again, we're talking about – some people are talking about catastrophic behavior here.
Well, we need to take a look at what's been happening over the last 84 months. There's been tremendous tinkering by injecting cash into the financial markets, and the markets have never cleared. And so we haven't gone through the recession that we've been waiting for. We haven't gone through the recession that we likely need to clear asset prices. And if you look at the correlation, not just with our stock market and all these other assets, but globally, most asset classes are all correlated, which means that quantitative easing is a global effect. All central banks are in the game, and all these assets are moving in lockstep. When you have correlation like that, when the market resets, the downward spiral, if you will, if there's no more quantitative easing available, it will be a pretty ugly outcome.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, so that's what I think investors need to be cautious of is looking for market hedges. We call non-beta alpha, which means non-market correlated returns, starting to look at other ways to get income outside of the bond market and look at asset classes that may not have been directly manipulated by central bankers.
What does your forecast show you about the effect on the market with COVID going into next year? This year, obviously, everything was turned upside down, but you wouldn't know it by looking at the market. It bounced back, obviously, minus today. But at some point, there's got to be some negative effects to this with loss of jobs and loss of people buying certain things. What does it look like next year forecast COVID?
So there's a K-shaped recovery going on. So some parts of the economy saw the V-shape because of the sugar high of the stimulus package. That's, you know, what happens when you throw $3 trillion into the pot. But there's certain sectors that there's going to be a permanent lasting scar, hospitality. There's about two-thirds of hotels that might go bankrupt in the next 6 to 12 months.
God.
You're looking at the travel industry. It's not back. I was just talking to some senior folks at American Airlines this morning. Historically, the travel kind of composition of travelers is mainly business travelers. Today, it's mainly tourists, and tourists don't spend as much money on tickets. And so the transportation industry, the cruise lines, they're all going to be very, very damaged. Capital and equity on the balance sheets of these companies is eroding quickly and getting into dangerous territory for anybody who has debt in these industries. So I think that the tale of two cities continues to play out. Financial assets, technology companies, companies that are in the service economy are going to do stellar over the next few years. The people on Main Street that are in these, what I'll call secular damaged parts of the economy, they need to come to terms and start to look for a new path forward for themselves. Because as long as we have another 12 months of this, this is what my estimates are, sometime by Q3, Q4 next year, we're going to be in this kind of weird limbo period. Those parts of the economy are going to continue to fall down, and they're going to erode the balance sheet equity on those companies. And we'll see a lot of echo effects of foreclosures and bankruptcies in those areas of the economy.
You're talking about hospitality. Do you ever see that stuff for or those people, like, well, in particular hotels, recovering for this? It's going to take a long time.
It will take a long time, and I think what's going to happen, we're starting to see hotels, banks starting to sell their hotel debt, CMBS loans, which is the big mortgage securitization market, starting to heavily discount the hotel debt. So there's going to be sales to vulture private equity funds that are going to pick up all these assets on the cheap. It's a tremendous opportunity to be buying hotels today if you've got the balance sheet and the cash to play through for another year or two.
Okay, we're in.
But the Yeah, but the people who are in the situation where they're equity holders today, they're going to have a rough go of it, and there'll be a lot of equity wiped out just because there's not the robust travel rebound that we're hoping for.
Ryan, really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Ryan Morfin. He's a CEO of venture capital.
Two-thirds of hotels
that's crazy,
go under,
isn't
and
it?
Then all the other hospitality things, and that's why it's so insane to hear that governors and et cetera are considering going back in and shutting things down, which is absolutely nuts. Bashir's talking about doing that. He's losing his mind. You can't do this. The lasting effects of this are going to be decades. Two-thirds of hotels.
Oh,
how many,
for sure.
How many people are employed by hotels?
Right.
Maids, you know, maintenance people. That's a lot of people. And you're going to shut down again? I was looking at the numbers here because everyone's forecasting doom and gloom on the COVID. With all the record number of cases, whatever. That's because we're testing so damn much. The average number of deaths, though, right now is about 807. And that's still down, 70% from the peak of the seven-day average of 2,700 in April. So we're nowhere near where we were in April. Okay, there's some hospitalizations. That's been on the rise. But hospitals are made to run on, 90-plus percent capacity. That's why you're supposed to have. Okay, so we're not in really any danger there. A lot of cases, but so what? And the number of deaths is still, again, down 70% from what it was at the peak in April. Why are we trying to shut down? Stupid.
We check traffic now. Rob, what is going on?
From the UC Health Traffic Center, UCHealthProud.com.
Eddie and Rocky back together again. Coming up at 5 o'clock, we'll be talking to Dave Lapham about the Bengals-Browns yesterday. Hell of a game that was.
It was. Joe Burrow was, again, amazing. The defense was not. And we'll also ask him about the latest with Carlos Dunlap, who, after the game...
This cracked me up.
Well, let's go. Before the game was kind of vocal about the fact that he didn't like that he was relegated to more or less situational pass rusher.
He's a third down guy right now,
and he took a picture and posted the depth chart on Instagram. Then after the game, after not playing well and getting in a fight with teammates and coaches on the sideline, he posts his house, Ed, on Instagram.
And it sounded like a nice house.
Yeah, it sounded pretty good. Yeah. But, I mean, even Tyler Boyd was like, this is some BS, man. I mean, come on. What are you doing? They can't keep him on this team. There's no way.
Well, and maybe he's obviously trying to
force his hand.
Bully his way
out.
Well,
in that regard, look, especially if he don't want to play, his salary is already guaranteed. If they cut him, he'll make his full salary. Do you want to make your full salary playing football or make your full salary sitting on the couch? He may decide to sit on the couch.
Do we know how much he makes? I'm sure
10,
it's a pretty penny. Yeah. I have no idea.
I believe it's around 8 to 10.
So, yeah, I could live on that.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do worse.
Exactly. So I'd get two hamburgers at Wendy's,
right,
man.
But if you're trying to build a culture the way Zach Taylor's trying to do, you can't have that on your team. Now, what's interesting is all the backlash back and forth has kind of brought the team around Zach Taylor, because Giovanni Bernard has kind of come and said, hey, we like what Zach Taylor's doing. Joe Burrow, Tyler Boyd, some others. So they've kind of came to Zach Taylor's defense. In this regard, Carlos Dunlap has brought the team more together around Zach Taylor, but that can only last so long. It's you can't have him around.
In all your years of playing, high school, college, and pros, did you ever see somebody like that just completely unhappy with what was going on and just basically bully their way out of it?
No, and see, this was before social media, so there wasn't that aspect of it where you could kind of go and in your little echo chamber of fans,
right,
and loyal, okay, supporters.
Well, you'd have to rely on
post-game interviews and media, yeah, but yeah. No, there's no one that I can think of that I can recall or remember. Something like that I would remember if there was a guy that was actively trying to get traded.
Were the other guys in the locker room, though, just, well, like you said, some of the people are rallying around Zach Taylor, so,
yeah,
you know.
That's a good thing, I guess. Now, I certainly believe that in that locker room there are a few guys, if not more likely many guys, that are questioning if Zach Taylor is the guy or not. But, you know, that's fair to do. But if that is your concern, you got to handle that stuff in-house. You got to be a professional. At the end of the day, this organization is paying you money to go out there and do your job, do what they're paid for, which is you produce the maximum potential of your ability. That's all. You're not into making decisions about the future of the roster or the future of the franchise and all that. No, you play football.
Well, if somebody's paying me $8-10 million, like you say, you know, I'm willing to take a lot.
See, you would think, and that's what's kind of head scratching to me is it's a pretty, you know, pretty good deal some of these guys are getting, and it's not good enough. They still got to complain. They still got to, you know, go online and do all this sort of stuff instead of allowing business to be handled inside the way it is. And it's only going to get worse. It's because the players, because of social media, are empowered more than they ever have been.
Well, that's, you know how much I hate that whole, yeah, that culture that's developed around social. It really is screwing a lot of stuff up.
Yeah. I feel like it's changed even since I've played. I feel like a lot of fans were kind of more pro-organization, more likely to kind of not be on the player's side, especially when it came to contracts. And they would be like, oh, wait a minute, now we already paid you. You placed that contract.
People are always going to be jealous.
Right.
And I always figure it's none of my business, but, you know, hell, you can't help but see somebody making a lot of money and go, wow, I wish I was making that much money.
Right, but I feel like it's kind of gone the other way, Ed, where the fans are more apt to back the players. I mean, look at the whole, you know, head trauma CTE thing, where I was shocked. You think a lot of fans would be like, look, man, they're paying you a lot of money. Go out there and play. But now a lot of fans are concerned, which I never for the life of me understood why the average fan out there working a blue-collar job would had all this care about CTE and players' future. Why? I mean, it's great that they do, but why? I never got that. Why they would be so concerned with that aspect.
Well, you know, the people are way invested in players. Well, you found that out playing. I mean, you know, you have your favorite guy, and you feel like, I mean, rightfully or not, you feel like he's your buddy or he's your brother, yeah, and you're rooting for him. And, you know, in your mind, he knows you're on his team.
Right. But again, I think it's more because of social media. It's kind of gotten that connection. It's become very, very pro player. It's interesting.
We've got the news now. News Radio 700 WLW. Eddie and Rocky back together. So we were just talking about Carlos Dunlap. And if you didn't see it, he had a little meltdown yesterday. I didn't see it on the sidelines. Did you see it?
Yeah, there was.
I think they showed a little bit of it, and I wasn't paying attention at that stage.
D-line coach Nick Eason looked like he got into it with him or somebody. And
right.
Then there was reportedly, and, you know, this goes, a fight in the locker room, maybe some yelling back and forth.
I thought I heard that too. Yeah.
So who knows? So it's whether he's leaving or not. It's not exiting gracefully or staying gracefully.
He put his house up for sale.
I know.
I think he's counting on it.
That's yeah.
But that got Rocky and I to talking about, you know, epic meltdowns at work, stuff you've seen or maybe. Shoot, I don't care. Maybe you did it.
Yeah.
749-7800, the big one, pound 700 on AT&T. Now, did you ever in a locker room along the way melt down against a coach or a fellow teammate?
No, but I know when guys were cut, and I was cut too, but I never, you know, but they would have security guards like come and walk you out. Like, so usually the Grim Reaper, who in our, like with the Titans, it was a strength coach. He was a guy that would tell you, hey, you know, on the last day of cuts day, hey, go grab your playbook, go see coach. Oh God, here we go. So we go, and then once you got back, and you know, then there'd be the security guard there to make sure you weren't going to go ape on somebody, and,
right.
And they would kind of escort you out of there. When I was cut by the Eagles, I walk go in the locker and get my stuff, and there it is right before waiting outside the door. I'm like, really?
Right.
That was made me want to get into a sort of tussle.
That would piss me off, to be honest with you.
Seriously,
I mean,
you know, like, come on.
And I'll give you a little backstage on working in this facility. When they're going to let you go, now here in this building, there's a little place down the bottom floor
right.
called Skip's Deli. Great little place,
oh,
by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so if you got a email or a phone call, as I did 10 years ago, whenever that was, I got a voicemail from the boss's, the big guy's secretary. Oh, and, you know, so-and-so wants to have a meeting with you today. And it was right around the time my contract was coming up. And I'm thinking, okay, well, cool. He just wants to settle this out. And I said, okay, what time? And she goes, well, at 2:00 at Skip's Deli. And that was because I called her as soon as I got the voicemail. And this was like 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was just leaving the gym, and I call her, and I go, Skip's Deli? She's like, yeah, like 2:00, you good with that? And I'm like, okay. So
you knew what was going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I came home, took a shower, got in my car, and then drove here to work. At like...
Before 2.
Oh, it was like 11:15.
I want some damn answers.
Right, and I come walking in here, and these guys were like, Hey, Eddie's here.
Right.
And I like, and so Daryl Parks at the time was like, let's go down the hallway and talk to so-and-so. So we did, and they told me what was, but Chuck goes, the general manager at the time gives Daryl Parks $20 and goes, why don't you take Eddie down to Skip's and buy him a cup of coffee? And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I'm like, I'm sitting right here.
Let's just go ahead and do this.
We gotta
right?
go down. We gotta go downstairs to the little deli, and that's what happened.
Just because Skip's is a place where you fire people doesn't mean you have to fire us at Skip's.
Correct.
I'm in the office. Let's just get it over with.
What do you think I'm going? Look at me. I can't tear up. I can't tear anything up.
Right. So
they're like,
it's just like out of Jerry Maguire, where they bring you to a restaurant, and so you can't make it. He says, "Oh, that's why you bring me here, so you can't make a scene and
exactly
do all that." Right.
But anything like that that's ever happened to you? 749-7000-800, the big one, #700 on AT&T. And I had back in the day. Maybe I was a little crazy back in the EBN days.
Yeah,
I'll let it go.
That's part of your genius. Yes.
But I had a few blow-ups with my boss at the time, and there were a couple of times when he shared an office with the assistant program director, and he was the nicest guy in the world, the assistant guy was. But me and the main guy just butted heads all the time. And there was one day when we were literally, that's the closest I've ever come to get in a fist fight in my adult life. I mean, we were nose to nose, screaming. And I happened to look over out of the corner of my eye, and that poor nice guy who was sitting there, he was turning like purple. he was just on his computer, not turning around at all. And I almost had, he was super uncomfortable. I can't believe he sat there the whole time. But man, this went on for, oh shoot, I don't know, 20 minutes, a half hour, just going at it.
This guy's like, can I leave? Can
I? I thought he would have, but I just happened to notice that he was just like, he was like flop sweating. But there have been some pretty epic meltdowns here in this facility. I've seen many of them.
I've had a buddy do the one thing where, you know, worked at a place. It was like a, you know, kind of like a manufacturing kind of place. Let's just call it that. And but got another job somewhere else. And so it's his last day. So he's going to call in and be like, you know what? F you, F you, F you. I got another job somewhere.
Right.
I'm out of here. Stick it. Right. Well, and then, of course, he did that. And then the new job, it didn't work out. And somebody, there was a loss of communication nice. Somewhere. So he didn't have it. And then he had to try to come back and. You know that big, you know, kerfuffle I gave you on Friday? I was just kidding on that.
Come on. So I was just blowing out the pipes a little bit. Right, you know.
Come on, man.
Let's have a sense of humor here, Rob.
I was just joshing with you.
Yeah. You ever melt down on somebody, buddy?
Yep. Several times.
Yes.
Care to share?
a few times while I was working there, but not anything I probably should go into. But we used to have meetings, staff meetings, and I was owed some money by a previous client, and they never paid me. And the program director at the time was telling me they were coming back on the air, that they owed the station money, but they got their money. And I didn't get mine. He's like, yeah, they want all the stuff that you produce for them put back together and back on the air. And I'm like, well, they're not getting them until I get paid.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you kind of have to do that because that's your job. I said, I went above and beyond, and it was not paid for, and they're not getting squat until I get my money back. And I ended up walking out of the meeting after I blew a gasket.
Nice.
I'd love to see Robble.
I know. Fired up, man.
it takes a lot to get me mad, and that just
that would do it though. I understand
infuriated
that.
Infuriated
yeah,
me,
of course. Yeah,
yeah.
Your calls, crazy stuff you've seen or done at work. 749-7800. The big one, #700 on AT&T. Rob, what's going on with the traffic?
From the UC Health Traffic Center, UC Health.
Eddie and Rocky talking about epic meltdowns at work. Taking your call, 749-7800, the big one, #700 on AT&T. Hey, Joe, thanks for ringing in. What do you have?
Hello.
Yo, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I just had one where I used to work with this guy. We were working in a pretty high-stress environment. You had to be, you know, do production every day, and they tracked it. Well, he just did enough to get by. He was kind of a jerk anyway. So anyway, they finally took him in, and, you know, we were letting him go in the office. So he comes out, and he's like, making all kind of noise, cussing people out, calling the boss names, you know, F you, F this. You can stick it, like you guys were saying earlier. Goes back to his desk and takes his arm and rakes everything off the desk onto the floor. And we're working in this building. It's kind of out in the outskirts. There's nothing else around. It's like 0 digits. It's like the temperature is like zero with a wind chill. So he goes slamming out. He goes out, slams the door, yelling and screaming. And we looked, and the stuff he raked off his desk, his keys and his phone were in there.
Nice.
So this guy's outside freezing to death. And so he waited, I guess, until he could, as long as he could stand it. So then he tried to get back in, so they called the cops. So the cops came and had to bring him back in there to get his keys and his phone.
Wow. I imagine the bosses weren't too just excited about letting him back in real quick to get his keys.
No, because, you know, just for security reasons, they thought, this guy, who knows, this guy might have a gun or something.
Correct,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, and we laughed for 2 days about that.
Joe, that's great, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, Matt, how about you? Talking about workplace meltdowns.
Well, Rocky has the patience of Joe, because when Mike Brown was thinking about bringing Mix into town, you guys were on Sports Talk one night, and Rocky, I saw you in Tallahassee, and I asked you about this. How in the world did you not kill Lance McAllister the night that you guys got in it over Mixon coming to Cincinnati?
That is a good call.
I remember you guys having that fight, as a matter of fact.
It had the potential for an epic meltdown. And Rocky, I've seen you out and about. I'm thinking he must be 6'10 and 300 pounds because you, you should have ripped his head. I'm getting upset about it right now. If I was flying a plane, I would have flown a plane into the building. You know?
Now I did cost the company one set of headphones that I smashed on the table, but
Matt.
As far as it went. Lance McCauley, he got under my skin.
I totally remember that happening.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's my buddy and stuff, but, you know.
Hey, Bruce, how about you talking about workplace meltdowns?
Yeah, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
Good. Got one question after this, but anyway, completely unrelated. I'm from West Virginia. Worked at a power plant. This guy, Tony, Union Construction, this guy, Tony, worked there. For whatever reason, his wife shows up at the gate, and I had to take him out to the gate, and they let her in, and she pulls a knife, and she's chasing this cat everywhere. I don't know what he did. I don't care what he did. But I've got to catch her and stop her somehow. Stop her. I've got nothing on me except the hard hat. You know, I don't. What, am I supposed to hit her with it or what? It was crazy. It was crazy. And one more thing, and I'll leave you guys alone. Rocky, did you watch that movie In a Stranger's House?
No, I remember you called last week to talk about it. I've not had a chance.
Yeah, okay. I just wondered.
I plan on checking it out. Maybe when my...
Thanks, Bruce.
In about 12 years, my kids aren't toddlers anymore. I have time to watch a movie. That might be the next time.
Gary, we're talking about workplace meltdowns. What do you got?
Hey, man, I worked at a radio station up near Dayton, and I've been there about 12 or 13 years as program director. And we were having a staff meeting the next morning at 8:30. Now, you know how staff meetings go.
Oh.
I think it started 5 minutes before or 5 minutes later, you know. So I walk in the door and get in the staff meeting, and I'm the last one there, and I'm like 3 minutes late. And the general manager started cussing and just blasted me in front of the entire staff. And I said, well, good morning to you, too. And I walked out the door. And so I go home, and my wife says, what are you doing home? I says, I don't know if I quit or I got fired. So I go back to bed, and I sleep another hour, right? And the phone rings, and it's the boss's secretary, and she says, Mr. Mack would like for you to come back in. I said, tell him I'll be there in about an hour or so. So I get up, and I re-shower, dress, and I go into the radio station. And the guy meets me at the freaking front door, and he says, good morning, Gary. How are you today?
Well, you tell me.
And so I kept my job. Never another word was ever mentioned about it. So.
Really? All right. Well, that worked out well for you.
I thought it was a great story you would enjoy.
That was great, Gary. Thanks, buddy.
I
like how he said, you know what? I'll be there when I can get to you. You know, I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to sleep a little bit, an extra 10 minutes.
That's
I'll get
great.
There.
Hey, Tim, how about you talking about workplace meltdowns?
Well, my favorite workplace meltdown story involves a football player that played at Ohio State. And, Rocky, you may remember this. This guy's name was Alonzo Spellman.
Of course you remember that name, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Chicago Bears waived him. You know, they said, look, we're done with you. And he refused to leave. And they had to bring in a SWAT team. They had an 8-hour standoff at the Bears facility because this guy just said, you can't cut me, I'm not leaving, you can't waive me. And they ended up hauling him out of there and taking him to a mental hospital.
I do vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. When was that, Tim, or more or less? You remember?
It was probably around late 90s or something.
Yeah,
that's right, because he had barricaded himself inside the facility and he's a big boy, and he's, I ain't coming out. And somebody's like, you go get him. No, you go get him, right?
I got to bring the SWAT team. I'd say that takes the cake.
Correct. That's
thanks, Tim.
There you go.
How did you handle it when you got the old, bring your playbook?
Man, you're just crushed, man. You're pissed, crushed. The time where I didn't handle it well was, again, with the with the Eagles because I had basically made a team. I was on the 53 man, and it's like Sunday. If you're on the roster on Monday morning, 8 a.m., right, your spot's guaranteed, all that. And I write about this in my book, by the way. And got the call on Sunday late afternoon. Nah, sorry. What do you mean sorry? Like, huh? On the team. No, you're not. Well, yeah, that was the one, again, where I showed up, and they had the security guards there waiting just in case.
You got active.
Yeah. And it's probably a good thing because I was like, I want to go. I want to talk to the coach. I want to talk to him face to face. And they're like, no, you're not going to do that. I'm like, hell yeah, yes, I think he did. I deserve that. Right. No, you don't. Okay.
You know? Bye now.
Right. So it was like, you know, do I get arm barred down on the floor here, or do I just go home? And I think I wisely
do you
somehow,
want to walk or perp walk out of here? I mean, it's up to
in
you.
In my mind, I wanted to take down everybody there. I mean, I did, but.
Well, we're going to come back to this topic. But we've got Dave Lapham talking about that Browns-Bengals game yesterday after the news. News Radio 700 WLW. Eddie and Rocky, as we like to do this time every Monday, we talk to our good friend Dave Lapham. In regard to, in this case, the game yesterday, Browns and Bengals, and you know what, Lap, if Joe Burrow could play the Browns every week, he would be in the Hall of Fame already.
So would Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it worked both ways. True.
Yeah, I mean, both of these guys, first pick of their respective drafts, man, they put on a show. It was a shootout. And Baker Mayfield's about 4-1 against the Bengals, and Joe Burrow, unfortunately, and no fault, not much fault of his, although he did have a couple of turnovers, and they got 10 points out of those giveaways, which is a big factor in the football game. But it's amazing. They scored the number of plays. This is crazy. They ran 49 more snaps than the Cleveland Browns in the two games, the Thursday night game and then the game yesterday. Wow. And they got outscored by 8 points. I mean, they scored 64 points. Only problem is the Browns scored 72. Unbelievable.
Yeah. What about the defense, Lapham? I mean, that was the big issue on Sunday here. The offense did good despite, I mean, they rotated in two backups at the offensive line positions and played pretty well. Again, Burrow over 400. But the defense, Lapham, with 106 left to go, I don't know how you felt in the booth. I didn't feel good about it, and that turned out to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I said one thing that they should try to do is not only score, but score with no time on the clock. You know, it's right. One of those games where the team that has the ball last, the way the quarterbacks are playing. Man, but that was, I mean, Mackenzie Alexander had a free runner sack on the first play, and Baker Mayfield got out of it. He had sacked them and the clock running, and their receivers way down the football field. They got to come back. They got to spike it. You know, it's all disarray. I mean, all of a sudden now you're looking at sack on first down, spike it on second. You're looking at third and whatever, and it's long. You know, after the sack, and it's a much different ball game. But didn't happen. You know, that was one of those a jillion plays that you can point to that it seems to be the case. This football team just loses game after game after game by one score or less, and just doesn't at crunch time instead of making the big play, they make the big mistake. It's too bad. The drive, the defense you're talking about, Rock Cleveland, they scored four touchdowns in the second half. Four touchdowns in the second half. In the second quarter, they scored a touchdown. Then they took a knee that's 5 out of 6 drives. They scored touchdowns. They run 40 snaps, 369 yards, 21 first downs, 5 touchdowns, averaged 9 yards a play.
Wow.
5 out of their last 6 drives of the game, they got touchdowns on. The only one they didn't get a touchdown took a knee, one play for minus one play to end the half. It was ridiculous. I mean, hot knife through butter. He completes 21 in a row, 22 out of 23. 21 in a row is a club record. And the 406 yards that Burrow threw for, the 6th most ever by a rookie quarterback.
So you're talking about the a couple of the turnovers there, Lap. Let me ask both of you guys this. Is Myles Garrett going to be the defensive player of the year if he keeps up this pace? Because that guy's on fire.
He's got 9 sacks, right, Lap? I mean, it's incredible. This early in the season, already 9 sacks. The guy's forcing fumbles. I mean, he's an exceptional player. There's no question about it.
9 sacks, 4 strip sacks. You know, I mean, he's got 2 strip sack fumbles against the Bengals, one at the 1-yard line on a Thursday night game. And then this one, they recover before they go out of bounds and, you know, like kick a field goal on this one. They score a touchdown on the one up there. Yeah, he's a game wrecker. I mean, the only guy that he trails in terms of sacks and pressures going into yesterday's football game was Aaron Donald, who has been defensive player of the year. So he's in lofty company. There's no question about it. You know, a couple of things, you know, in this football game, that are crazy. Both of these quarterbacks we talked about want to shoot out. First time in NFL history, they were go-ahead, 5 different touchdown go-ahead passes in the fourth quarter. First time ever. Both the quarterbacks combined for 5 back and forth and went like a ping pong match. 5 go-ahead touchdown passes in the fourth quarter alone. 8 touchdown passes between the quarterbacks, the most in NFL history between 2 former Heisman Trophy winners. And it's number 2 all time between former number 1 picks, Cam and Eli Manning, threw 9 touchdown passes in the matchup they had. But the 8 touchdown passes, 2nd most. I mean, these guys put on a show.
Yes, they did. I mean, fun game if you had no vested interest in either team winning. So let's turn to this, Lap. Give me the Carlos Dunlap update. Where are we at with this? He's put his house on the market. He wants out. He's posting the defensive line depth chart on his Instagram. You know, we talked last week about keeping business in-house, which he obviously is not. But where's he at? Where's the locker room when it comes to Dunlap? Where are we at with this?
I don't think there's much. I don't think he's getting much support. I don't think there's guys rallying behind him in the locker room, from what I can understand. I mean, he's out there all by his lonesome. Just you know, you got a guy like Giovanni Bernard, who had the greatest Zoom conference call after the game I think I've ever heard, in terms of being a team leader. And it was all about team. And Carlos is all about Carlos. And you know, it's funny. Adversity. It's an interesting dynamic. There's no question about it. Adversity shows character. It also exposes character. And, you know, everybody's frustrated. What do you do with that frustration? You know, you have to channel it and funnel it the right way. Carlos is channeling and funnel it absolutely the wrong way. You know, there's 2 things, Rock, that we know as former players that bother players or should bother players. And first and foremost, take playing time away. They've done that. You know, Carlos Dunlap against the Colts had a 230-pound tight end. I'm watching this Indianapolis game again. The 230-pound tight end, that's basically a big wide receiver, blocking him one-on-one, and they run right behind it for a 7-yard gain. I'm like, Jesus, that just can't happen.
Yeah.
He's got to get better effort than that. That's why he's not in the run defense. And the bottom line is the way he's acting now, you know, like you said, he had the Zoom call where he announced he wasn't going to start anymore. He takes a cell phone shot of the depth chart on the board. He basically, on the sideline, goes after assistant coaches at the end of the football game. That's 3 cases, in my opinion, of conduct detrimental to the team. What I do is I go to a collective bargaining agreement, which maximizes fine. And that's the other thing, getting the guy's back pocket. If playing time doesn't motivate him, maybe money will. I don't know, maybe he won't sell as many pancakes down in Florida at his restaurant or whatever, but what he's acting like right now is a petulant child. I mean, it's like, you know, when he gets disciplined, he's not taking any responsibilities. It's everybody else's fault. And, you know, he's being a kid.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, Lap. I mean, that's kind of the younger mentality these days is I'm a victim. Well, you have some responsibility in that, too. Like you said, you're getting tossed around the field by a 230-pound tight end, and you're a 6'6", 260-pound D end. Don't tell me about, you know, why asking why I'm not playing as much. Well, it's on the tape. Tape don't lie.
Tape don't lie. Eye in the sky don't lie. Let's go back. University of Florida. This guy's an athletic freak. Size, speed ratio. Unbelievable athlete. Should have been a top 10 pick in the draft. Slides in the 2nd round. Why? Business decisions. When he was at Florida, he didn't play hard all the time. First 3 years, Marvin Lewis wouldn't start him for the first 3 years. He had a designated pass rush role. Wouldn't start him because business decisions. Wouldn't play hard every snap. Every head coach, every defensive line coach, every defensive coordinator has fought the same problems. And this group of coaches, you stand up with it, and they're like, I'll play a guy with lesser ability that's going to try and give me effort every single snap instead of loaf plays. And right now,
you know, you hope that Carlos might grow up. Might grow out of it. He's in his 30s now. He's Peter Pan. He won't grow up. I won't grow up. Why don't you just become Tinkerbell, grow wings and fly away? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous, man. It really is.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, Lap, is the Bengals were, as an organization, willing to put up with it when he was producing, when he's having even last year, what, 8 sacks, year before 9, 2015, he had the, whatever it was, the 15 and a half or whatever it was, he was producing. But so coaches are willing to put up with a little bit of, okay, lackadaisical effort here and there, maybe some non-leadership type things going on. Okay, fine. You're still producing on the field. But when you're not doing that and you're causing the problem, it's time to go. It's time to go.
Well, you know, let's look at the years he had big numbers, teams in the playoffs. Now he's not playing. He's not giving the effort because the team's struggling. It's called a front runner. You know, I mean, a guy of his talent, a guy of his ability, he should have broken Eddie Edwards' sack record so damn long ago. It's ridiculous. I mean, yeah. The fact that he's still one sack behind Eddie Edwards is ludicrous to me. Eddie Edwards was a try-hard son of a gun. Every snap, he's coming like crazy. Lou Anarumo today on a group conference call said, in the last 72 pass attempts, one sack. And that was Philip Rivers trying to run to get past the line of scrimmage. You know, he gets some protection. He tries to run. He can't run. He gets tackled the line of scrimmage. One sack for no yards lost. That's all they've had in the last 72 pass attempts. I mean, you kidding me? Both Philip Rivers and Baker Mayfield, they never get them off their spot. They never get them out of the rhythm they were in once they get into it, and they just rip the secondary apart. And I'll tell you, Baker Mayfield threw some dimes, just like Philip Rivers did. You let these NFL quarterbacks sit back there and have a cup of coffee and read this classified ads, I mean, they're going to kick your ass.
Yeah, exactly. Back there, they're playing 7-on-7. Every quarterback lapping in practice during 7-on-7 is accurate and hitting all their spots. In the game, you're supposed to pressure them, get them off that spot.
Yep, no question.
All right, Lap, what do you got coming up here tonight?
Well, we got Zach Taylor, we got Brian Callahan, we got Joe Burrow, we got a whole host of players talking about the ball game. Drew Sample, a bunch of guys talking things through. So, I'd say we have 8 or 9 different voices on tonight's show.
Nice,
great, buddy. Listen to you then.
Have a good one, man.
Thanks, Lap.
And it'll be Lap and Lance coming up here at 6.
Lap laying it out there. Tinkerbell.
I could tell he was getting better as he was talking.
Yeah. I like an unhinged Lap.
We got traffic. Rob, what's going on?
Man, that was a great game. It gives you something to look forward to in the future, doesn't it?
Oh, they're going to be going at it for a while.
Rob, wait. Rob, don't be going trying to be optimistic here, okay? We are in full-on, like, pessimistic mode here in Cincinnati. Don't give me your optimism.
Well, that's okay. I'm a Browns fan.
Just do the trash.
From...
Hey, and Rocky, just talking to Dave Lapham, and, of course, hearing him get all heated up about Carlos Dunlap. Pretty funny.
It's pretty good. And we were talking earlier about workplace meltdowns. Because that's kind of what he's having. A little bit, you know, a little fight on the sideline, a little locker room.
You think you're fighting everybody in the locker room, you're fighting on the sidelines, and you just go home from work and sell your house. Or try to sell your house. I'd say that's pretty much a meltdown.
That qualifies as a meltdown in the Rockin' Ed Man's book.
So that led us to talking about your experiences with that, whether it was you or somebody else. 749-7800, the big one, #700 on AT&T. And hey, Steve, wanted to get to you. Thanks for holding there, buddy. What do you have?
Yeah, hi, guys. It was about like 15 years ago. I was at work, and a small mom-and-pop company, and I was the first one there, opened things up. We hired 2 guys, and I was in there working one day. They came in, and it was one of the days where everything just started going wrong. Mm-hmm. And so them 2 guys were always coming up to me, how do you do this, how do you do that? And I would always help them out, but when everything you touch goes wrong and they started getting on my nerves and I was trying to drill some parts, wouldn't work, then one of them walked up to me and said, hey, how do you do this, how do you do that? And I snapped. I started yelling and screaming and throwing parts, and I just walked over the time clock, clocked out, and I left.
Well, that's probably good you did that instead of taking one of those drills to somebody's head or something.
Exactly. You know?
You did the right thing there, Steve.
So, Steve, I mean, but you kept your job?
Yeah, I went home, and the next day I went back to work, went into work. The owner of the company didn't come in until like 10 o'clock every morning. And I went in the next day, and the guys, you know, are you calm down? I'm like, yeah, for now. Well, they started asking me questions, and I said, I'm not here to babysit you. I'm just going to sit here and do my job. And then the boss finally came in. He's like, I'm sorry I missed your little temper tantrum. And I was like, I was freaking pissed off. And he's like, well, let's go in and talk. And so I went in his office. We sat down and talked because I'd been there for like 12 years. And he says, you know, what's wrong? And I said, I'm holding hands. I'm having to train these guys. They should know it by now. You know, I said, I don't get paid enough to do it. He's like, well, what do you want? I said, I want $4 more an hour. And he's like, oh, I can't do that, I don't think. And he said, I'll see what I can do. Well, the next day I went in, he walked in, he says, I got you $2 more an hour. Are you happy? I'm like, yeah.
All right. Worked out.
Thanks, Steve. No, that's right. You know, sometimes the squeaky wheel and all that.
Yeah, there's just definitely some wisdom to that.
Your meltdown chats, whether it was you or somebody else, 749-7000. 800 the big one, #700 on AT&T. We will get to your calls right after the news right now. News Radio 700 WLW. Eddie and Rocky have a little while longer. We got Lance and Lap coming up here at the top of the hour.
Bengals line.
Yes. In the meantime, though, taking your epic workplace meltdown calls. 749-7800, the big one, #700 on AT&T.
You've
had some good ones.
I don't know why I'm just thinking of this, but you used to watch the Chappelle Show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's a scene where, or the skit where he acts like what he would do if he got Oprah Winfrey pregnant. And he does this thing where, you know, like Oprah calls him like, Dave, I'm pregnant. And he walks into work in a studio and just tells everybody, kiss my this, and just throwing stuff on the ground. I'm out of here. You know, it's exactly what you would do.
But taking your call, 749-7000, 800 the big one, #700 on AT&T. But let's get to Dave's call. David, you're on Pathed and Rock. What do you have?
You guys show. It's great to drive home listening to you.
Thanks, buddy.
This was not in my own work office, but it was at a customer's office. I was a young guy, like late 20s, got promoted. I'm doing engineering and sales now, so I go to this brand new customer. It's a factory. About 300 people work there. I won't say the name. Anyway, so I go there, and they had a little project, so I did my bid on it. I did not get the job, but that's okay. You don't get every job. So then they call back a few weeks later. They got a dust collecting system that they need hooked up. And it's really hard to pick up wet, oily machine dust. So anyway, I designed the system, engineered it. I give them a price. I don't hear anything. About a week later, I just call back and say, hey, the guy's name was Duke. So I said, Duke, you know, just looking to see how my price was and design and all that. And he said, yeah, we gave that to somebody else. I said, okay. So about a month goes by. And I get another call, and I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be my last call. No, nothing happens. But so it's for air compressors to keep shutting down because they get too hot. They need them cooled off. Mm-hmm. So I walked up to the air compressors. We have to go near this dust collecting system, and I quoted but did not get. Wouldn't you know, there was about a dozen or maybe 15 machines. They were, the system was designed exactly, not close to my design. It was exactly
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So either two companies had the exact same approach, which is just impossible, you know. So
right. Anyway,
so I don't say anything, but we go on to the air compressor room, and because there's a lot of companies out there that can install, but they cannot design. They got to hire an engineer to do the designing. So,
of course.
But anyway, so... in this room, and when they shut down, they got to close the plant down for like it depends, but 4 to 6 hours, and wait for everything to cool off, and then that's just, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, because it would happen all the time. So I look at it, and I do everything I got to do, and all everything back to the office. I give them my price. This time, I don't give them my design. So they said, well, we can't give you a job. We don't know what you're going to do, you know, how you're going to do it, what equipment, all that. I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure those air compressors never shut down again because they're too hot. And here's my price. Well, I didn't get the job. They were mad at me. The maintenance guy, Duke, was okay. He was a good guy. It was his boss above him. Wow. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Duke, thanks, Dave. Hey,
I'd be mad, though, too.
You know, no kidding, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, thanks for holding, buddy. What do you have?
Oh, this was in the mid-80s. I was about 25 years old. I was managing a tire store, a large tire store. We did a lot of business. And this guy come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and he asked me to do something that I knew was impossible to do. He asked me to put a real big fat tire on his front tires, and I told him, sir, that's not going to work. They're going to rub. It's going to ruin your tires, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he insisted. He says, oh, I know different manufacturers vary. You can try a couple, and you can probably get something to work. And this company I worked for was real company-oriented, customer-oriented, so I had to be just as nice as I could be. So we had worked on this thing from 8 till noon, had tried 4 different brands of tires, and none of them worked. They all rubbed. Well, I wasn't really paying a lot of attention because I gave the job to my service manager. He was taking care of it. And all of a sudden, I hear this guy jumping my service manager's stuff. He's just up in his face. And my service manager was a little French guy named Steve Darbeau. He would have killed this guy if he had went off on him. So I knew I had to get out in between them because Steve's face was starting to turn red. So I get out in front of him, in between them, and I look at Steve and I say, Steve, take that guy's piece of S and put his old tires back on it, pull it out of here, and don't ever pull it in here again. And I turned around, I pointed at him, and I said, you, buddy, you get your A in that piece of S, and get your ass out of here, and don't ever come back again.
There you go.
Their jaws are dropping. They're looking around me. And the guy left, and I thought to myself, that felt really good. I said, well, I probably just got fired, but it felt really good.
Felt good. Get your money's worth,
yeah,
Greg.
Thanks. Right. Hey, man, if you're going to go that far.
Go down. Yeah.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for calling, man. What do you have?
Yeah, you say Keith?
Yeah.
That's me, man. Yeah, that's what happened to my brother. This really wasn't in the workplace, but he was driving down the road one day, and we live out in rural Champaign County. You know, it's pretty bare out here. Anyhow, my brother's got a problem with tailgaters, so this guy in a big truck, he was tailgating my brother. So my brother jumped out of his car, and once he got to the stop sign, he actually knew the guy who was tailgating. He's like, you know, get off my butt and so on and so forth. And when he jumped out of his car, he locked himself out of his car. So after he keyed this guy's butt, then he had to ask him a ride to take him to his house because he's our set of keys.
That's pretty good.
The guy did it, but that was pretty cool. I thought it was funny.
That's good, Keith. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, David, what do you have? Talking about workplace meltdowns.
Late 80s, I was working at King's Island, an international restaurant above the main entrance. You remember that, Eddie?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was kind of like a high-end place.
Yep.
Anyway, I was in college, busy night, and four college kids come sit in my friend's section, another waiter that was waiting tables. They sit there for like 3 or 4 hours. It was just brutal. The check was like $300. They tip him $6.
Wow.
He says to me, watch my section. I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm going to go down there and give him his tip back. He walks all the way downstairs to where the ice rink is, you know, where the fountain is, sees the guy, sees the couple. It's four people. It's two couples, young couples. He throws the money at him and tells him, you know, save it for something else because this wasn't worth it. Not only was it a horrible tip, they sat there 3 hours what he could have been making other money with other tables.
Right.
He came right upstairs. They were following him. I said to the manager, hey, you might want to go to the front door. By the time he got up to the top stairs, my buddy had his uniform off all the way to his jockey shorts and T-shirt and handed it to the manager, said it was worth every dime. I'm out. Left.
Wow.
Glory to God.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Seen that guy in a long,
I was saying, you seen him since? Yeah. No?
I saw him about 10 years ago and he's doing fine, and we laughed about that story.
Nice.
See, that's
awesome.
Thanks,
good
Dave.
Stuff. Strip down to the undies.
I'm telling you, man, that's cojones. Hey, Jason, we're talking about workplace meltdowns. What do you have?
Yeah, I got a good one. It's that military guy always calls in with the funny military stories.
Yeah.
So, hey, I was in the Navy. This is 2005, 2006 at Oceana. So we're sitting there, and I got sent TAD to fuel farms. So I have a major come in, Marine Corps. He comes in, Harrier. Harrier is made in UK. Now, the thing about the Harrier back then, well, this model, had no air conditioning. It's August. He comes in with a full wing rack full of bombs. You are not to come in there because he wanted to be, we call it like hot fueling. You can't hot fuel an aircraft with bombs on the wings at a fuel farm because, of course, it could blow up.
Yeah.
So he starts just losing his crap. And I'm just standing there. Yep. Yep. He's just screaming. And you see his arms flailing everywhere. And he's like knife handing me from the cockpit. And I'm trying so hard not to laugh.
Yeah.
And so he got really super mad. It was a great, it was hilarious. And then rear admiral ended up coming out there, like one of the higher ups, because he started going off on somebody else. Just had a massive meltdown. It was great.
That's good stuff.
That's I wouldn't want to piss off somebody who had a
plane full of bombs.
Correct.
Yeah, not the guy to do it with. Yeah,
but I'm probably not going to give him any fuel if indeed that would mean that, you know, you could blow up the boat.
What was he asking? Like, hey, just, you know, just
top
give
me
some
off
slack
for,
this time,
well,
real
I have
quick.
No
I'll never
idea.
Do this again, but go ahead and fuel me up with all these this payload here.
See, I've seen some pretty epic meltdowns in the radio business. Like I said, I had a couple of them. And this was back when EBN was in Hyde Park. And I forget what made me mad. But it was just, I had to, it was during the show. So, like, you know, that we'd be playing music, obviously. And so you'd have 12, 15 minutes to just kind of go out and use the restroom and get yourself a coffee or whatever. And something had, I forget what it was that made me mad. But I go walking out of the studio and there was a hallway that you came into. And then over, he went around the corner and went on to all the other offices. And for whatever reason, it just, I went out to get a cup of coffee and to blow off some steam, but I couldn't help not doing this. So I took my coffee cup and threw it as hard as I could down the end of the hallway and put a hole in the drywall.
Wow. He chucked it.
It was high heat, man.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that my program director's office was around that corner,
mm-hmm.
in a little short hallway, and I'm just cussing to myself. I'm not screaming, but all of a sudden I'm walking. By the time I got to the end of that hallway, he came the other way and was like, "Did you do that?" I said,
"Do what?"
As a matter of fact, I was like, "Yeah, sorry about that." I was like, you know, something. Just I told him what happened. He's like, "All right, we'll fix it."
I thought you were gonna say you hit him with it or something.
Oh no, he was he totally under. I mean, I had a very valid point, but I should have handled it differently.
Let's think?
Let's just put it that way.